read this, you know, before we get into number 11, was it number 11? Number 12, June 69, there's a letter from the guy marketing the Dew Line. Eugene Schwartz, president, Human Development Corporation. So he's the guy, you can read about him in the biographies. You know, he proposed this newsletter to McLuhan. McLuhan agreed. So it says, and this is 200 Madison Avenue, New York, New York, 10016. Phone number is 212-889-1711. So Eugene says, dear friend, as you are fully aware, you are one of the charter subscribers to the Marshall McLuhan Dew Line newsletter. During its first year of existence, the newsletter has established some rather startling records. One, it has attracted over 4,000 leaders in business, government, and the intellectual world to its subscriber ranks. It has established itself as a multimedia gadfly in England, France, Italy, and soon to be Japan. It has been roundly criticized by approximately 85% of all national newspapers and magazines who have reviewed it. We are sorry about the other 15%, but you can't win them all. Universities all over, so it looks like they got bad reviewed by a lot of organs. Universities all over America have written to us requesting permission to reprint entire issues for their classes. This permission has been given. A 42-page analysis of its latest issue is now being considered by one of the leading academic journals. Its multimedia format, in brackets, after a few sputters, close bracket, is now about to swing into slides, tapes, and bracket, for the first time in publishing history, a poker deck. All this for half the price. To achieve this accomplishment, however, it took a little more doing than we had anticipated. For example, to produce a monthly newsletter in a standardized four-page format is a cinch. To produce a monthly newsletter in an absolutely non-standardized multimedia format, dash, especially when that medium shift varies from paper to plastic to die cuts to slide projectors to bicycle playing cards to TV commercials, dash, is impossible. Therefore, our decision was simply this, colon, either to drastically limit the multimedia format or retain it, even expand it, and go to an every other month schedule. We chose the latter. And you save by this decision. Starting with the July issue, the Marshall McLuhan Dew Line newsletter will come to you once every other month instead of once every month. Therefore, its cost will be reduced by half to $25 a year. In order to accommodate you to this change, not only will your present subscription be honored for twice the length of its remaining longevity, but you will be given one bonus issue free. In brackets. Thus, if you have six monthly issues coming under the old once-per-month format, you will now receive not only six every-other-month issues, but a free seventh issue with our compliments. Close bracket. We think you'll agree that the new Dew Line, new is underlined, we think you'll agree that the new Dew Line is sharper, funnier, more penetrating and provoking, and just more mind-expanding than before. We would, of course, appreciate your reactions, comments, and suggestions. Sincerely, Eugene M. Schwartz, President, Human Development Corporation. So we're looking at the McLuhan Dew Line, Volume 1, Number 12. So it's
Did the letter say they're cutting back?
Because they're using very complicated multimedia formats, and it's a lot more
work.
I already have
something to say there.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I think the multimedia is expressing the detachment from the tyranny of the eye, the one point of view, just looking from one single angle.
Yeah.
And we're starting to enter this tactile space where we have the 360 degrees.
Yeah.
We see everything and we multitask and we are seeing the filtering of the hologram from many different medias.
Yes.
And for example, some people know, for example, I would say, as an example, the Dorian Gray. but not from the original work, but from a movie. So all this, which is another point of view from maybe like a director of a movie. So it's not the original work, it's already filtered into something else. So we have access to these digested different types of perception and alterings. And I suppose he wanted to do that with the different types of media in which he was communicating.
Right. Yeah. And Eliza, he's saying it's too expensive. It's too hard to do it every 4 weeks. So he's going to make it a 2 month. Every 2 months, they'll put a new one out. Because they're going to do different. They're going to put out a card deck. Now, you can see that Duline card deck online somewhere. It's just put it in, the McCune Duline card deck, and you'll see it. And it does other weird stuff. Like this one we're going to do probably have had slides. So people could look at the image that the commentaries is showing in Cultures Our Business. We'll hear. You'll see it. Hear it. But I Xeroxed these in the library at the University of Toronto, 40 years ago, and they wouldn't have had the slides in the library, so I didn't get the images. So your point, Roxy, was just that I read the letter where they're saying they're doing these multimedia format. You're saying that's the way they have to do a newsletter.
Right, because he was already seeing that he did the metanoia of the vanishing point, how we perceive and how perspective change. And so now that we're entering a new environment where the vision is losing its supremacy.
Yes.
There is, and only, it's also, they're looking from only one angle. We have.
But here's the other thing. They're sending objects for you to handle, so it's tactile.
Yeah, but do many people use cards?
Yes, use cards. Yeah, what's your point?
That they had so many different forms that it became expensive for them to keep up with it.
Just couldn't make the objects or order them or get factories to make the Duline card deck. They had to design the card deck. George Thompson tells that story. I think it's on one of the McLuhan of Maui early ones George comes on. And it took a while for them to make the card deck. It took 2 months, so they were late. But this is the issue number 12, so they've had 12 issues. It's the first year, the year-end report. Because they started in July 68, and this is June 69. So It says the McLuhan Duline, and then vertically, you have to turn it on the side. On the left vertical column, it says adverse, A-D, then V-E-R-S-E, adverse. Then opposite, another horizontal layout, it says adjunct, J-U-N-K-T. So adverse.
Yeah, it's a place like at poetry or at trash, at
right.
Your higher culture or your lower pop.
Right. The ads are junk, the junk of the culture. They're going to retrieve the junk and make some commentary, but that's also adjunct, additional, plus, extra to the art and the verse, the poetry that's in the commentary in the ad itself. Adverse, adjunct. So they're recognizing the ad is an art form and the copy, what they write in it, and then they know they've been junked and they're going to adjunct, they're going to supplement and explain the adverse. The adverse, the enemy. So I think I'm going to read, they have an introductory page. I'm going to put you on hold. Mute you and then do this, then come back. So I'll just read the introductory part.
All part. participants are now unmuted. All participants are now muted.
This is June 1969. What am I doing at that point? I'm getting ready to go visit Dave Worster in September 69. What else is going on? We're living in Dartmouth, and what did I just say? I was, well, I muted you. We were getting ready to go to Seattle. I don't know if I said it that way. We were going to go to Seattle in September 69. So here's what the first introductory page is. To wind up its first year of publication, the Dewline newsletter. Oh, I didn't complete that thought, but I've said it before. But okay, so this is June 1969, Volume 1, Number 12 of the McLuhan Dewline. So the introductory page says, to wind up its first year of publication, the Dewline newsletter here presents a multimedia look at some current advertising. Each of these ads is presented on a slide, while the accompanying printed commentary discusses the content of the ad or its techniques or related social areas suggested by it. Hence, one level of the title, quote, adverse/adjunct, quote, unquote. All aspects of dynamic, quote, popular culture, unquote, are always at the height of their effectiveness in shaping or reflecting the present, and the present is italicized, reflecting the present of a culture considered as trash. All aspects of dynamic popular culture are always these aspects at the height of their effectiveness, so right when they're really doing something, in shaping or reflecting the present of a culture, they're always considered as trash. As Roxy said, this is the last issue was about trash. When in use, comic books were called junk. Now they are art, collector's items. Until TV, movies were considered garbage. Since TV, they have become an art form. It is obvious where TV itself currently fits into this progression pattern. With increased satellite communication and space exploration, it too will shortly become an art form. So you're going to have the famous moon landing in the next month, July 69. Then you're going to have Manson in early August 69, killing those people in Hollywood. And then on August 15 to 16 is Woodstock. So it's quite a summer. So continuing, advertising as a mode of communication and of education of the public has changed radically since the advent of TV. To maintain itself, it must always be effective. So immediate is the required rapport, so immediate and intense is the mass response that lack of a contemporary stance can mean, quote, overnight death, unquote. Ours was once a society in which business was our culture. This was the period of private jobs and distant goals and ambitions of the self-made man, and in brackets, and the man-made self, and the success ladder. In the past 50, and in brackets, and particularly in the past 15 years, however, our culture has reached a new and totally different plateau in its evolutionary progress. A complete reversal of the old ethic has taken place. Ours is now a society in which culture is our business. So before, business was our culture. Now culture is our business. And as an asterisk, this culture is our business is the title of a new book by Dr. McLuhan on advertising since TV, shortly to be published by McGraw-Hill, some portions of which may appear soon in this newsletter. So that book came out in 1970, a year later. And it's a beautiful book, as Roxy can see, and it's an update of his collection of ads and commentary called Mechanical Bride, came out in 51 before TV was a general environment. So now, almost 20 years later, he's got to update and show how advertising changed after TV. So he continues here. Education in all its present forms, including military, business, extension work, and by no means least advertising, is the biggest single venture undertaken by our society and the world. The classroom, which used to dominate education, and which has changed relatively little during this period, is puny and relatively insignificant, and in brackets, and almost wholly ineffectual, close bracket, by comparison. Obviously, too, distant goals and the success ladder bear equally little or no relevance to quote, instant, unquote, success or failure, as does the old classroom to the contemporary scene. So obviously, two distant goals and the success ladder bear equally little or no relevance to instant success or failure, as does the old classroom to the contemporary scene. In traditional terms, while the rest of society operates within dialectical and grammatical confines, advertising carries forward the... Ooh, missing page here. So we'll see what if there's another page. Carries forward. Yes, it does. It goes to the last page. So this is, I'm reading from page one, and it doesn't, it's, oh, it says continued on last page. So that's page 24. So in traditional terms, while the rest of society operates within dialectical and grammatical confines, advertising carries forward the third part of the trivium, the tradition of rhetoric, of employing for persuasion the arts of encyclopedic wisdom and eloquence. The ad man is a modern Elizabethan man, with a difference. He must also be an artist, i.e. it is essential that he act as the antenna of the culture, that he be aware of and ever prepared to respond to the slightest shift in the corporate conscious and subconscious of his audience. He is thus ideally an adjunct to the culture he deals with. An artist, educator, and rhetorician, he should be intimate with all developments, all italicized, he should be intimate with all developments in the arts from Surratt and Baudelaire to the present. Ads are the cave art of our time. They are no longer just objects to be seen, that's in quotes. They are no longer just, quote, objects to be seen, unquote, but are intended to exert power as if magically at a distance, to transform and control or utilize the hidden environmental forces and assumptions. The audience does not, as before, quote, identify, unquote, with the ad. Instead, the ad now puts on the audience a subtle but decisive shift. As mentioned, anything fully contemporary is junk, junk in quotes. Only through the gradual aging and archetypalization processes does it become art, good or bad. Ads as cultural cliches are junk, junk in quotes, as long as they remain effective, i.e. contemporary. Ads are therefore both junk and adjunct to the culture they pervade and help create. They are also, as Jockey Lowell implies, he wrote the book Propaganda in 1965, they are also, as Jockey Lowell implies, as such, the most potent form of propaganda imaginable. Okay, so unmute and see if there's any commentary.
Participants are now unmuted.
Yeah. The 300-degree new cave is full of ads where we see the new magic, the subliminal seduction, the mythic.
You're becoming a goddamn poet.
Yeah, this is what keeps the group together. And in this... cave, it's hard, it's easy to get lost in the trivial, but there are persons like McLuhan or you that can decode this and break this. He's talking about the dialectic and the grammatic of the expression of society. That this is the new Tribune, the new encyclopedia, the new Wikipedia, and where the Rhapsode expresses
the
now.
Rhapsode. Yes.
This is the Marlborough Man being the new mythic. And
new mythic? Are you saying mythic? M-Y-T-H-I-C?
Yeah, like the Marlborough Man.
Yes.
Was like. The first ad, because cigarettes were not selling very well, and when they start doing that, and people associate smoking with the frontiers and freedom and all these myths of America, then smoking becomes It's the most successful advertisement ever, I think.
Is that right?
And even McLuhan said it's a new gospel.
A new what?
The new gospel, the gospel of the Marlboro Man.
Yes.
But
does he say that in Mechanical Bride? Are you saying he says that in Mechanical Bride? Are you quoting him?
No, I don't remember where
right.
he says that, because I usually I'm reading all books at the same time.
Right.
Because for me, it's like the Bible. It's a collection of books that complement each other.
Yes.
And this decoding, this is what you had been doing, the decoding of the Emerald Tablets, the Bible, and the Wake, and the decoding of how things came to be and are becoming, and how the ISO transforming our chemistry and our physical. This is the decoding of these formulas, for example. And he says popular culture is considered trash at the height of his...
Because it's dealing with the present.
Right.
People don't want to live in the present.
Yeah, they prefer to go to Bonanza and see the Marlboro Man.
The past. Is this the way you would talk to your sisters when you were a teenager? You're getting your oats going here. You're becoming the new authority. Is this what you did with your family when you were considered the smart sister? Would you be lecturing people and telling them what's going on in the school?
Yes, I suppose.
Are you? I'm not complaining about your talking. It's very interesting, but you are talking. Did you talk a lot like this in high school among your friends? Were you quiet?
No, because I always engaged people that were much older than me and were more really intellectuals, and that's the way I had to engage.
Would you listen and then figure out what they're saying, then say it back to them? Or were you always stating your opinion anyways? Like with the Gurdjieff school?
I try not to express opinion, but I'm really trying to understand things.
Right.
And I will engage conversation for learning, for example, or for making things clear. I think as I am explaining, I'm explaining I'm explaining it.
Yeah, you're learning as you speak.
No,
you're explaining it to yourself.
As I am explaining to others, I'm actually explaining the thing to myself.
Yes, yeah, you're thinking of explaining out loud.
But I think you are doing the same when you are talking about what you did all your life as you did before.
Right.
And you are seeing how things are falling into place and how everything makes sense.
Right now, were you considered precocious? And there you are with these older people doing the Gurdjieff music. You weren't just a timid little person. You would be able to talk with them. So you were considered like a little genius or something?
Well, they were all very intelligent. So I suppose for them was also, it had been also like this because they, for example, the Gurdjieff guy, he's the Stockhausen of electronic music in Mexico.
Yeah.
He became my mentor and he will, for example, play Stockhausen music, John Cage and things like that. as if we were listening to the Beatles, like, and he will discuss the composition and all these things, or he will be building his own analog synthesizers, and he will ask me to. I don't know how you say when you melt the metal and
welding,
and glue
welding
the pieces, the circuits.
Yeah,
and I didn't really knew how to build. He's an engineer, but I will just do what he will say, like do this and do this. But that made me like very familiar with technology, and like I lost fear of being surrounded by cables and computers and these things were like my toys.
Yeah, yeah. So were you the only one, was it a course, and there were students, or you were the only one there, the only young person?
No, it was a private center. We were four composers, and we made like a center of multimedia.
And did you go to regular school while going to the Gurdjieff guy after hours?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So this was like
In the music conservatory and in the normal French school.
Yeah. So this would be after hours, after school, and this was your hobby. And you would have the advantage of this guy's experience. Did he ever compliment you? Was he struck by how young you were?
No. No, because I think he himself was like that.
Himself?
Yeah, like so. And that was the only place where I felt like normal, because in other environments, I always felt like you're the nerd, and I would be talking about things I found very interesting, and people or the people on my age will be talking about TV programs and the new trends, and with them I would felt normal, or like they were talking things about things that I thought were relevant. Like understanding the universe with frequencies, like the ray of creation and the music of the spheres and all these things.
Yeah, Gurdjieff's ray of creation. Okay, well, that's pretty. What do you think of that, Bert?
Just fascinating beginning, just to begin school
I think we're actually just trying to understand the environment, like
material. Well, that's what artists do.
The cold breakers.
Yeah,
artists study the means of communication because their job is to communicate. So they had to look at the new technologies. So as the 20th century unfolded and more technology dumped on people, the role of the artist as that kind of explorer, which wasn't so obvious 100 years before, is what McLuhan was telling people. The artist is a guide to new technology. It was not obvious 100 years before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in a way, this is what I've been doing all my life. Like, I really want to know. And I get like very enthusiastic, and sometimes I have no patience, and that's why I say this is the space in which we should, for example, study what you are saying, or in a deeper way the wake and all these topics, because
that's what you did. That's what you did with the Gurdjieff group. See, Bert, we have high standards we must live up to. We must live up to the Gurdjieff group's scientific
probing. I have a question for Roxana.
My other coach.
Roxana, what were you doing with the guy melting metal? Were you building a circuit board or something?
Yes, the thing is, before, I started electronic music when I was 11 years old, and at that time, these machines were like monsters, and you have these modular synthesizers that were very, very expensive. It's like you needed a whole room to put the Buchla or these monsters, and they were really expensive. So his family was very wealthy, but still he had to build many of his equipment himself. And for example, Vicente Rojo, who also is a graphic designer, and me, they were both into electronic engineering too. And I will just see how they do it, and they will ask me for help. And I think it was good that that I could engage, and it was only men composers, and they were all much older than me, but this helped me to not to be afraid to, for example, here it's usually Bert and you, and I think many women are intimidated by men who know a lot, like Bob.
Mm. Right.
And they may engage like in trivial conversation and joking and hee hee ho ho, but they don't go into really.
Because,
for example, McLuhan with the best scholar of Joyce McClure and William Lewis and
right.
And you have to,
Bob, you still have a lot of females around you. More females are drawn to you than men.
Yeah, there's more women here, but
I was seeing another documentary of the friend that was the singer of these weird songs with it. Because he died, they made a documentary, and somebody was saying about us. These, they were not the best musicians, the best composer or anything, but they had the guts and the means to do what they wanted to do.
Mm.
So we dared to. And,
you say there's a documentary about your mentor? Is that what you just said?
No, that's the singer of one of the bands, the one with this crazy text.
Crazy what?
The lyrics.
Oh, yeah. The printing press and the paper in no time. You're saying there's a documentary on that guy.
Yeah, because he died, and somebody was saying about our band that we were not the best musicians or the best composers, but we dared to do what we
right.
wanted to do and had the means to do it.
Can I see that documentary?
Yes, but it's in Spanish.
That's all right. Just looking at the imagery, it'd be fun. So this is on YouTube?
Yes. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. And this was made recently or 10 years ago or what?
I think like 2 or 3 years ago.
Right, and this is about the fact you were the first electronic female, and this electronic group in Mexico 20 years ago was a big deal, right? No one else had done it. So you're part of history.
Yes, it was like the first techno group, but they made it because he died, actually.
Right, yeah. What about the Gurdjieff mentor? Is he still alive?
Yes, he's like the Stockhausen of electronic music in Mexico. Last week there was a concert here in Berlin with his music. And there's a lot of things from him.
What's his name? Have you sent me recordings
Antonio
of him?
Antonio Rusek.
Antonio Rosette.
Rusek, R-U-S-S-E-K.
Yeah, you sent that to. You've sent him to me, right? I played him a while ago.
I'm not sure, but he has very long pieces, so that's why I don't send them to you.
So your teacher...
Like a payday, but maybe you can play just a small part.
A part of it, yeah, I can do that. So your teacher became a cultural institution, you know, a known thing. He was successful.
Yes.
Mm.
But yes, they were... He's a professor of... In different universities, so
right.
He's an engineer, and he's into.
Do you ever speak to him?
Yes, every time I go to Mexico, I see him.
Ah, what did he think of you? Does he prompt you in some way, or does he not understand you? Like, what does he say to you? But what your career?
He says that I should do more things in Mexico, and that maybe we should do something.
Mm.
Which I think we should, because like last year, the other composer, Vicente Rojo,
yeah,
he had a heart attack, and yes, I thought like, oh, yes, because they're older than me, maybe I should,
yeah, before they
the
can
frequency.
Die,
they cannot stand the frequency anymore.
Right, yeah, they can't take the frequency. Okay, so let's go over to the first ads. Thank you for that little history. So we'll mute everybody.
All participants are now muted.
So they say the first slide, slide number one, is Lysol, which is a cleaning thing. So I think it's cleaning. But we don't have a picture, but there is a space could see it, or maybe they stuck it. It was attached. A slide was attached to the space. And beside it, it says, the title criticism or commentary says Bloodhound. Then it has underneath in smaller letters, turning down the nose. And in smaller letters, it says, so there must be a dog in there, because they're talking about this dog. It says, in the ad, the savage and relentless bloodhound is becoming an object of pathos. He does not seem terribly hot on any particular scent. So that's very tiny print. Then a little bigger, now we're going to read the column. So that was just the title, three titles. Russell Erb, in his book, The Common Sense of Smell, that's sense is S-C-E-N-T-S. Russell Erb, in his The Common Sense of Smell, notes that if a lion were sprayed with catnip, it would die laughing. One of the most interesting features of a tribal society is the bride sniffer, and that's in quote, the expert who goes around sniffing the maidens and matching them up with appropriate spouses. And these paragraphs are in different sized print. Is a smaller print. These archaic or traditional societies know very well that compatibility between human beings is closely allied to odor and BO. The visually oriented Western world typically is concerned with the suppression of all odors as undesirable. The ghastly sprays and applications that have been invented to cover various body and other, in brackets, odors, the ghastly sprays and applications that have been invented to cover various body and other odors are a department of the most bizarre comedy. Europeans know better. They use perfumes to bring out accent BO, in brackets, as we use salt in food, not to suppress it. The U.S. military now has the equivalent of a, quote, bride sniffer department, working on the principle that a flea can smell a human being a mile and a half away. They have developed a sort of sniffing machine, that's in quote, quote, that can distinguish between a colored man and a white man, between friend and foe, at half a mile. This is a new extension of man indeed, the osmic dimension, the smell, osmic, the osmic dimension. Then in bigger size print, a change of human metabolism also changes BO and probably creates incompatibilities between marriage partners without their having a clue as to why they suddenly can't bear each other's company. In a highly visual society, a psychiatrist might never discover this. I read that again. A change of human metabolism also changes BO and probably creates incompatibilities between marriage partners without their having a clue as to why they suddenly can't bear each other's company. In a highly visual society, a psychiatrist might never discover this. and in smaller print. One of the cool features of this ad is, of course, the lugubrious look on the face of the bloodhound. He exhibits consternation at the prospect of a sterilized environment. Well, that's a question. He exhibits consternation at the prospect of a sterilized environment. Smell as such is deeply involving. Whatever involves profoundly is cool. So I'll read that last paragraph again. One of the cool features of this ad is, of course, the lugubrious look on the face of the bloodhound. He exhibits consternation at the prospect of a sterilized environment. Smell as such is deeply involving. Whatever involves profoundly is cool. Okay, so we're going to go on to the next slide 3, which is called Encyclopedia. I think it's a picture of the encyclopedia, probably the Encyclopedia Britannica. So I'll mute everybody. I mute you just to make sure we get good quality.
All participants are now muted.
Okay, so it's called Encyclopedia, slide 3. And smaller letters, it says Book of Change. Then in very small letters, we have now entered a sort of unwritten book of changes. So he's sort of saying that the environment's become, the global theater's become the I Ching. We have now entered a sort of unwritten book of changes. Soon, in order to westernize our kids properly, we will be sending them to the East. Now, a lot of these ideas that I've been saying, we've heard in previous Do Lines about they're being applied to, he's reading an ad. He's translating an image. So he says, before writing, in a tribal society, learning took the form of everybody memorizing the traditional wisdom, the, quote, tribal encyclopedia, unquote. Eric Havelock's preface to Plato describes the term of this tradition in Greece with Homer just prior to Plato. So it describes the term. That means, the end. Eric Havelock's preface to Plato describes the term or end of Greece, the tribal encyclopedia tradition, with Homer just prior to Plato. Now, the Evergreen said that Homer was the first to write down the stuff, to write down the tribal encyclopedia. So it says, Homer's great hero, Odysseus, is provided with the epithet Polumetes, Polumetus, which means man of many devices. That's in quotes. In James Joyce's Ulysses, his opposite number, meaning Odysseus's opposite number, Leopold Bloom, is an advertising man, resourceful and encyclopedic in his grasp of the urban and modern society, whereas the tribal oral tradition formed a sort of, quote, time machine, unquote, whereby all times could be telescoped into the present. Bloom was a space salesman. Incongruously, Madison Avenue has taken up the, in brackets, ancient, close bracket, rhetorical tradition of doctus orator, of encyclopedic wisdom as the source of the arts of eloquence and persuasion. Plato took a very dim view of the sophists with their eloquent encyclopedic wisdom and ability to talk on any and all subjects persuasively and to seek power by this means. And he says, the, quote, Americanization of the encyclopedia, unquote, is here incongruously in the ad, that is, in Oriental terms. All the images are Oriental. The Chinese recently discovered the efficacy of anonymous poster art, in brackets, as theater in the streets, bracket, in mobilizing a culture. So reading that again, the Chinese recently discovered the efficacy of anonymous poster art as theater in the streets in mobilizing a culture. In brackets, anonymous, meaning unanimous. Anonymous in quotes, and then he says that means unanimous, close bracket. Elul, that's Jacques Elul, who we mentioned earlier, the French thinker. Elul defines propaganda as the entire culture in action at once, not merely isolated segments of it or ideas. On the other hand, according to the ad, quote, according to the ad that we're looking at, it says, quote, even when our experts write about Red China, they do it in plain talking, straightforward American. Because we pick experts who know how to say what they have to say in a clear, dynamic, enlightening way. That's what the Americanization of the encyclopedia is all about. You can see it in the 62,000 subjects and 19,000 photographs, illustrations, and maps that make up the Americana. So it's the Americana Encyclopedia, not the Encyclopedia Britannica. So then it goes to the next page. There must have been some obscure self-conscious motive. What is this? Oh, yeah. Okay, so he quotes the ad. It says there's 62,000 subjects and 19,000 photographs, illustrations, and maps that make up the Americana. End of quoted part. Quotation marks, end of that. Then McLuhan says, there must have been some obscure self-conscious motive at work there in the mind of the agency that came up with this ad, some subconscious reaction to the process whereby, as the Western world Easternizes at very high speeds and moves inward on diverse inner trips, all our external skills, all our hardware disappears, dissolves. That includes the encyclopedia, the Gutenberg technology, and the highly individualistic forms of culture and motivation that result from phonetic literacy. Little could be less relevant, in intention at least, than this ad. So he's saying the ad is like a mistake. It's very irrelevant. So he says, little could be less relevant, in intention at least, than this ad. But unintentionally, subconsciously, the ad does point to the great revolution going on in our midst, of the West going East concurrent with the Westernization of the East. That's the end of that ad. I can go on to the next one. Slide 4, IBM telephone, IBM hyphen telephone. Telephone, capital letters, big letters, telephone. These days, we can afford to think about the future of the telephone because so many other technologies have gone around it that has become an archaic and artistic device. When it was new, about 1915, the word phony, and that's in quotes, the word phony entered the language, meaning, quote, as unreal as a telephone conversation, close quote. Today, the telephone is an indispensable instrument in all decision-making. As an environment of information, it goes around the postal system and the memo. In any big city, very busy executives talk endlessly on the telephone like a bunch of village gossips. It becomes almost impossible to get them off the phone. Since the telephone went around the postal system, it now costs about $4 to get a piece of mail sent out of an ordinary office. When a letter costs $4, as much as or more than an ordinary book, we know we have reached the term of the letter, or the end of the letter. The technology, the postal system are finished. We have struck, remember the last new line was called Strike the Set. So McLuhan says, the technology, the postal system are finished. We have, quote, struck the set, unquote, as it were. One of the peculiarities of the telephone, and one of the reasons it is so loved by tribal man and teenagers, is its non-visual character, which demands total participation of all of our senses to fill in the image gaps. The telephone image in quotes, the telephone image in auditory terms is very poor. It is exhausting and demanding. Besides being useless, the videophone, so he's talking about the videophone. Besides being useless, the videophone is a ludicrous impossibility as presently contemplated. Nobody would answer it until he had tidied up his room, straightened his necktie, combed his hair, and generally put his entire environment in order. This is an impossible situation. In brackets, some people won't answer even the present phone unless they are wearing their glasses. We're talking about a regular oral acoustic phone. Some people won't answer even the... No, what is that? Even... Some people won't answer even the present phone unless they are wearing their glasses! Exclamation mark. Close bracket. James Joyce foresaw all this in a phrase he used in Finnegan's Wake. Quote, television kills telephony in Brothers Broil. In brackets, the broil, in quotes, the broil is a war of sibling senses. Close bracket. Then he says, he, meaning Joyce, saw the conflict of the two media as lethal. Okay, so you should be recognizing McLuhan's being very lazy. He's adding a few little things, but he's repeating a lot of what he says in the other newsletters.